Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q4 FY24 earnings conference call of Tarsus Products Limited, hosted by Ambit Capital. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Karan Khanna from Ambit Capital. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you, Yashasvi. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of Ambit Capital, I welcome you all to the Q4 FY24 and FY24 earnings conference call of Tarsus Products. From the management today, we have Mr. Rohan Sehgal, Whole-time Director, and Mr. Santosh Agarwal, Chief Financial Officer. Without further ado, I would request Rohan to start with his opening remarks, post which we can open the floor for Q&A. Thank you, and over to you, Rohan.
Thanks, Karan. Good afternoon, everyone, and a very warm welcome to all on our Q4 and FY24 earnings conference call for Tarsus Products Limited. Along with me today, I am joined by Mr. Santosh Agarwal, the Chief Financial Officer and Compliance Officer for Tarsus Products Limited and SGA, our investor relations advisors. We have uploaded our quarterly investor presentation on the stock exchanges and company's website. I hope you have gone through the same. Firstly, we are pleased to announce that the board has recommended a final dividend of rupees 2 per share, 100% of face value, on a fully paid-up equity share of 2, each for FY24, subject to the approval of the shareholders at the AGM. Let me now start with giving a brief on the industry. The demand for plastic labware has experienced a strong rise over the years, driven by multiple key factors, primarily being substantial increase in investments in R&D. As various industries continue to prioritize innovation and scientific exploration, the need for reliable and efficient labware has become more pronounced. However, speaking of the recent trends, the life science industry has seen some difficult times in FY22 and 2023. We have seen early signs of recovery in the second half of FY24, which we are monitoring closely and taking steps to capitalize on this opportunity. We expect gradual improvement, particularly in the pharma, CRO, research, and the diagnostic sector. Technological advancements have also played a critical role in propelling the demand for labware. Innovations in manufacturing process and material science have led to the development of the most sophisticated plastic labware products that meet the stringent requirements of the scientific industry. These advancements ensure that the labware is not only durable and cost-effective but also capable of withstanding severe conditions such as extreme temperatures and chemical exposure, which are common in laboratory settings. Additionally, the rising demand from emerging economies like India has significantly contributed to the growth of the plastic labware market. As countries with growing scientific and industrial sectors invest in their R&D capabilities, the need for high-quality labware solutions has escalated. This trend is particularly evident in regions that are rapidly expanding their scientific research infrastructure capabilities. This widespread adoption underscores a growing trend towards the preference of plastic labware. As scientific research and industrial applications continue to evolve, the demand for advanced, efficient, and sustainable labware solutions is expected to maintain its upward trajectory. Speaking on Tarsus, Tarsus is one of the leading manufacturers of plastic labware products in India, holding a 25% market share in the products we produce. Over the last four decades, Tarsus has developed a strong brand and earned the trust of its customers, making us the preferred choice of plastic labware products across various end-user markets in the country. Our robust distribution network comprises of around 140 distributors in India. In addition, we have a dedicated sales force of more than 40 people, maintain constant contact with end customers to drive product sales and cross-sell our extensive product portfolio. In addition to our domestic sales, we work with 45 distributors globally to support our international business. We have adopted a two-pronged strategy for our overseas business, branded sales under our brand and the original design manufacturing ODM sales under the white label arrangement. In FY24, the ratio stood as 35:65, 35% for the branded and 65% for the ODM. Now, speaking about the recent acquisition, focusing on the promising growth prospects in the international business, in FY24, we did a strategic acquisition of Mirbe, a Hamburg-based company specializing in plastic labware products. This move highlights our confidence in capitalizing on the growing opportunities in the international market. With Mirbe, we are poised for significant expansion, particularly in the European market, by leveraging its established distribution network. By integrating Mirbe's extensive experience and established relationships, we are positioned to offer a broad range of products and services to meet the diverse needs of our international clients. This acquisition unlocks new avenues of growth and propels our business to greater heights overseas. Speaking on our Q4 and FY24 performance, despite the global challenges, we achieved the highest quarterly revenue of 87 crores in Q4 FY24 on a standalone basis, reflecting a 6% YOY growth and a 40% growth sequentially. For FY24 on a standalone basis, our revenue stood at 277 crores, lower by 2% from the previous year. Standalone EBITDA for FY24 stood at 103 crores. Margins in FY24 were impacted on account of a change in the product mix, one-off expenses of 2.8 crores in Q1 FY24 related to the due diligence for a potential acquisition that did not materialize, and 3.7 crores on accounts of provisions on inventories. Adjusted for these one-off expenses, our EBITDA stood at 110 crores with margins at 40%. Additionally, our margins were affected by the initial costs of our upcoming facilities in Panchla, which were expected to start generating revenues in FY25. Regarding our consolidated performance, if we include only the standalone India business and the Mirbe business, our revenue stood at 296 crores and EBITDA of 105 crores. Going forward, our consolidated margins might appear different due to the inclusion of Mirbe, which is currently a trading entity, with lower margins compared to our India manufacturing business. However, we are actively working on leveraging synergies and enhancing cross-selling opportunities through Mirbe's established distribution network. This strategy is aimed at boosting our revenues and consequently increasing our profitability through efficiencies and operating leverage. An update on the CapEx. Firstly, on Panchla. In Panchla, we are introducing cell culture products, a new segment for us, by also expanding capacities for existing products. As explained earlier, the civil construction of the site is completed and our clean rooms are here. The first clean room is ready and the other clean rooms are under completion. Machineries we ordered are being delivered and we are on track to have the facility ready. Initial production for commercial sale is expected to commence in Q3 FY25. In our AMTA plant, the MOU has been signed with the Board of Radiation and Isotope Technology. Once the radiation plant is ready, we will be shifting part of our sterilization requirement in this facility, reducing our reliance on a single vendor. Furthermore, construction is progressing for our central warehouse operations, aimed at streamlining our inventory management and operation processes to enhance efficiency. We are on track for the completion of this facility and this should be up and running by Q3 FY25 as well. Before passing the call to Santosh, I want to acknowledge the industry's current challenges due to the external factors. However, we remain confident in maintaining excellence. We look forward to the opportunities and challenges ahead as Tarsus enters a new phase of growth. The acquisition of Nodwin marks a significant milestone, opening new avenues for growth and reaffirming our dedication to expanding in the global labware market. With this, I would like to hand over the call to Mr. Santosh Agarwal for his comments on the financial highlights.
Good afternoon, everyone, and a very warm welcome to our Q4 FY24 earnings call. On the revenue front, the standalone revenue from operation for Q4 FY24 stood at 87 crore rupees, which is highest ever quarterly revenue as compared to 82 crore in Q4 FY23, a growth of 6%. On QOQ basis, our revenue growth was 40%. Standalone revenue from operation for FY24 stood at 277 crore as compared to 283 crore in FY23, the growth of 2%. Our consolidated revenue from operations for Q4 FY24 stood at 106 crore and for FY24 it stood at 296 crore. Revenue from Norway for Q4 FY24 was 19 crore, which has been consolidated from 1st of January 2024. For Q4 FY24, revenue from export stood at 28 crore and domestic at 59 crore. For FY24, revenue from export stood at 83 crore and domestic at 194 crore. For FY24, on standalone basis, export sales contributed around 30% and domestic sales contributed around 70%. With respect to EBITDA, our standalone EBITDA for Q4 FY24 stood at 34 crore as against 39 crore in Q4 FY23. Our standalone EBITDA for FY24 stood at 103 crore as against 130 crore in FY23. EBITDA margin for Q4 FY24 stood at 39.1%. Margins were partially impacted on account of change in product mix. As a prudent practice and in line with the recommendation of auditor, we have taken a one-time provision of 3.7 crore on inventories in Q4 FY24. Exclusive this one-time provision, our adjusted EBITDA for Q4 FY24 stood at 38 crore as compared to 39 crore in Q4 FY23. Our adjusted EBITDA for FY24 stood at 110 crore adjusted for 2.8 crore in Q1 FY24 on account of due diligence for a potential acquisition which did not materialize and provision of rupees 3.7 crore as mentioned above. With respect to PAT, standalone profit after tax for Q4 FY24 was 19 crore with PAT margin of 22%. Profit after tax for FY24 was 51 crore with PAT margin of 18.5%. With respect to Nasdaq financial, the company has clocked quarterly revenue of 19 crore in Q4 FY24. On the PBT front, the company reported a profit of 1 crore. Lastly, we would like to highlight that despite our profit have decreased for FY24, we have been able to increase our cash flow from operation. Our cash flow from operation on standalone basis stood at 105 crore as compared to 76 crore in FY23. With this, I would like to open the floor for Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We'll take a first question from the line of Ashutosh Parashar from Mirabilis Investment Trust. Please go ahead.
Hi sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So the first question is on the sequential recovery that we have seen on the standalone business in both domestic as well as export market.
Mr. Parashar, sorry to interrupt. Can you use your handset mode, please?
Is it better?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah. So, first question is on the sequential recovery that we have seen in both domestic as well as export markets. So, sir, if you could please highlight which segments have led to this recovery
and do we see this trend as sustainable in the coming quarters? And second question is on FY23 numbers in euros that the sales that we did and the earlier EBITDA margin trajectory based on your filings, it was around 30%-40%, but this quarter the margins were again. So what has led to this drop? That would be it.
Sir, your voice is not properly audible. We heard your first question, but we have not heard the second question. So Rohan will give the answer for the first question. What are the industry which led to this kind of growth in this quarter?
If you could repeat your second question as well, we could answer that as well.
Yeah. So second question, sir, on Nerve. So this quarter, it seems to have been revenue of 19 crores with EBITDA margin of 10.5%. So based on your filing earlier, it used to do margins of around 30%-40%. So what has led to this drop in margins, and how do you see this trending going forward?
So the industry has, as I had mentioned earlier as well, the industry has started showing glimpses of a rebound and moving and getting gradually better. So we see the sequential growth. We must also remember that historically, the fourth quarter always tends to be the strongest quarter in Parsons in India as well as globally. And this year was no different. We performed extremely well in Q4 and performed to our expectations. Sequentially, I think the revenue trends would follow like how they have followed historically. Q1 is always the lowest quarter. Q2 and 3 are similar quarters, and Q4 is significantly a stronger quarter as compared to the other three quarters. So I don't see FY25 being any different to that. But we see an improvement in the industry. We see a better output as the inventory levels across the industry are getting lower, both in India as well as internationally. I think in terms of the customer base, I think the private sector sees a lot of gains in India. There is a lot of private investment in India in biotech and biotechnology. A lot of new infrastructure and new investments coming up, and suppliers to the biotech industry like Parsons stand to benefit from that. On your second question on Nerve, I think the margins for Nerve, what we see in FY2020 and 2021 was an anomaly. It was a one-time margin because they had a lot of one-off revenues and contracts with public and private companies in Germany to provide products for COVID testing. Such businesses and such contracts do not exist anymore as there is no more testing in COVID. And Nerve being a company which actually brings in products in their own brand name and sells to the end customers in the private and public sector in Germany and all across EU cannot have a margin of about 30%-35% sustainably by importing and selling these products. But with our synergies, our manufacturing synergies, as well as their customer-based relationships and the distribution strength in the EU, we look to leverage both revenues as well as the bottom line as much as we can.
Got it, sir. So one more question, if I could ask. So that would be on the domestic diagnostic segment. So last few quarters, we have seen the competitive pressure internally in the diagnostic segment abating a bit. So the leaders have started showing good growth again. So how has that segment been fared for you, and how do you see it panning out in the next few quarters, the domestic diagnostic piece?
I assume that most of the questions are aimed at the diagnostic testing industry because most of the listed entities are in the diagnostic testing industry. So our revenues have stabilized and are similar to pre-COVID levels. Of course, they are not at the COVID levels because there is no one-off requirements for COVID testing plastics. But apart from diagnostic testing companies, there is a huge demand coming in from diagnostic equipment manufacturers and diagnostic kit manufacturing companies in India. More and more innovative companies are coming up, and we see opportunities as being a preferred supplier for such companies.
Got it, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the line of Jayveer Shekhawat from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question and congrats team on an encouraging growth in your domestic business. So first, just to understand that, I mean, given that we have seen good YOY growth in your standalone business after many quarters of decline or say flat performance. So one, could you help us understand how the demand environment in FY25 year to date shaping up, and what kind of growth expectations we have for the standalone business in the coming year?
Sure. So we won't be able to give you an expectation on growth because we're not going to be giving any sort of a forecast or any sort of a like a growth number. The market, not only from an internal perspective, the labware market is still on a recovery phase. Things are better than before. As I said earlier, the inventory levels are getting lower. But there are a lot of external factors as well. I think the geopolitical situation is very unstable at this point of time globally. And apart from the geopolitical situation, logistics and supply chain have been disrupted and do not have the same stability and smoothness what we saw in the pre-COVID levels. So as soon as we achieve certain stability, there are certain events which come up internationally, which slow things down. So shipments, incoming shipments, outgoing shipments, political tensions all across the world, all these contribute significantly to expansion and growth in the international market. So it is not the most stable period at this point of time, but we try to carve out new products and foster new relationships, grow our existing relationships, and try and do the best what we can in FY25. But the situation seems much better in terms of the demand level as well as in terms of the reduction in inventory levels.
Sure. And do you want to call out why your domestic business has seen only a 3% growth while your exports business has done very well in mid-teens?
So as I mentioned earlier as well, the international business, because of the current scenario, we could have a situation where we do not show a good growth in a certain quarter and show phenomenal growth in another quarter. It is based on shipments moving. So as per accounting policies, once the shipment bill is generated, that is the only time we can record that shipment as revenue in our books. So we could have shipments worth $1 million or $2 million lying in our warehouse on the last week of a certain quarter, which move on the first week of the next quarter, and the other quarter may look really well. So we should consider domestic on a quarterly basis because the revenue happens on an everyday basis, but we should consider international business on a more longer period, like an international basis, because it's very difficult to have accuracy quarter over quarter because of supply chain issues.
And just to add on that, we are still facing a lot of container issues. Shipments are lying ready for months and months, and we are facing the container issue. And once the container line up, then all shipments are going. It is very difficult to give any kind of actual numbers of revenue on the basis of shipment on a quarter to quarter basis. It is always better to see the export movement on a longer term basis.
Sure, that's helpful. And on an acquisition, we're just trying to understand the opportunity here. So given that revenues have also declined almost 50% versus the last year, if you were to analyze the current quarterly sales, so how are you thinking about this business, let's say, from a mid to long-term perspective, and even more granularity in terms of where the margins could possibly settle on a steady state basis? And secondly, you've talked about these cross-selling opportunities and the synergies. So could you also provide more light on that? And what period will it take to sort of start reflecting in the margins and growth?
So when we acquired the company in Germany, Nobe, we were very, very clear about, the ability to, generate revenues and what was a steady state revenue for Nobe, looking at the 2019 and 2022 and beyond revenues. 2020 and 21 were one-off revenues and very different from the revenues we had generated during COVID. They were the revenues of products which could not be replicated or repeated. And hence, all the valuation and the acquisition was done based on numbers would seem realistic today to us. I think, you know, Nerve business, you know, at current levels, we look to grow it on a year-over-year basis, and these levels are much stronger than the pre-COVID numbers of Nerve. But if we consider the numbers which we saw in the 2 years of COVID, in their financial year, January to December 2020-21, that would not be accurate.
Sure, but any timeline in mind when you want to reach at least a steady state EBITDA margin? Because I'm sure the 10-12% kind of a margin that you reported this quarter, I don't think that's a margin that you would do on a steady state once we have news that recover.
Absolutely. I think, you know, as the inventory levels come down and as they are able to, you know, sustain, you know, the demand levels back to, you know, the standard levels at this point of time, the European economy is not in the strongest level. The inventory levels are still there. And being a distributor of such products, I do not see you know, as I mentioned in the one of the earlier answers as well, that 30-35% margins are never sustainable. They were never there for a company like this, you know, pre-COVID, and or in the entire history of its 35-40 years. It was just available for the 1 or 2 years because they had special contracts for COVID testing. So I think mid-double-digit EBITDA margin would be a sustainable margin for Nerve moving forward.
And, you know, just to add, if you see the Nerve financial results for last 3 or 4 years, they always maintained a gross margin of, you know, more than 50%. Pre-COVID, always 50%, more than 50%. During the COVID, it was always more than 50%. And after COVID also, it is also more than 50%. It's about the sales volume, which came during the COVID time. During the COVID time, they got, you know, sales of 1.16 million and, you know, 30 million euro kind of turnover during the COVID time, which is not there. Once they increase their sales, you know, the EBITDA margin will improve.
Sure. And my last question is on the inventory provision. So could you provide more light on the reason behind that? And also, you're sitting on almost 130 crores of inventory. So are there any risk of provisioning or write-offs there?
So you are talking, your question is regarding the inventory, right?
That's right. The inventory provision. So why have you taken that?
The inventory provision is more like a, you know, temporary provision. All the stocks are in good condition. These are old inventory, and on the request of auditors, we thought that we can do this provision, but once the sales will come or we utilize those raw materials, I think the reversal will happen soon.
So especially in terms of the shelf life or the sterilization requirements, do these not change with the life of the inventory? I mean,
all
is there more risk when the inventory
comes? All the materials and finished goods are in good condition, because we have not done the write-off. We only created a provision. We could have done the write-off only for those inventory for which sterile period of 5 years is over, right? But that is not the case in our scenario.
Sure. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to answer queries from all participants, please restrict your questions to two at a time. You may join back the queue for follow-up questions. Next question is from the line of Jasdeep Walia from Clockvine Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thanks for taking my question. Sir, could you give us the audited numbers of Nerve for CY23? You said last time that by now they would come.
So we already shared in our investor presentation. The audited numbers is about to be, you know, they have reported approximately 3 million euro in last 3 months, right? And if you talk about the last year, calendar year 2020 number, they have reported about to be 8 million euro of revenue.
8 million euro?
Yes.
And EBITDA?
The EBITDA margin was about to be, you know, 1,78,000 euro, approx.
1,78,000?
Yes, approx.
Okay, got it. Got it. And this is a fair reflection of the business of last year, CY23?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't a fair reflection. It's a period of stress for the business because we were going through high levels of inventory, and a lot of inventory rationalization was done at that time. A lot of inventories were sold at lower prices to get rid of excess inventories. I think there is a lot of scope of improvement from those numbers. And as I mentioned earlier, a mid-double-digit EBITDA of around 14%-15% would be a sustainable EBITDA for Nirbhay going forward as we grow the business and the revenues.
Got it. So at this last quarter's run rate of business, can you achieve double-digit margins in this year, FY25?
No, I think it would be a it would slowly scale up, and our goal is to reach 14%-15% EBITDAs for Nirbhay moving forward as we grow the revenues. So at this point of time, I do not know, almost 2.5 quarters left, because if you look at their financial year between January to December, that we could achieve that number, because there's still a lot of inventory rationalization going there. They're still recovering from huge inventories in their system. But moving forward, as we integrate more of our products into the mix, and as we have more of Tarsan's manufactured products from India, which Nirbhay begins to sell, I think we'll be able to achieve that.
And when do you think that, you can start selling products manufactured in India? Have you set a target for that?
We cannot set a final target, but we start the process from this quarter and slowly scale up. And I think there would be a period of time before we can add all the products. Nirbhay has more than 2,000 SKUs. So it cannot be, it's not a product group which we can just turn around and say that we've started supplying to Nirbhay. So as we keep scaling up the SKUs, it would be a process based on, how the market is reacting, how the market is growing, what sort of inventories they have for the current from their current suppliers, and so on.
Got it, sir. Got it. So my next question is, sir, what is the percentage of your sales from government? What is it as a percentage of sales in the domestic business?
So you mean the sale, what we have to the government from our domestic entity or from Nirbhay? I'm not very sure.
From domestic entity. As a percentage of standalone business, what is the sales to...
We assume around a fifth of our domestic revenue. This is what we assume, because we don't sell directly to the government. We sell to distributors, and distributors sell to final customers. So 20% of our domestic portion of our total revenue.
Got it. So my understanding is
that... Mr. Walia, I request you to join back the queue, please, as we have other participants waiting.
Okay.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the line of Rishabh Gang from Sancheti Family Office. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Now, I want to understand more on the revenue side. The revenue growth, let's assume this geopolitical things get over. Then what can be the reason for not growing, right? Would it be on supply constraint or on the demand constraint? A bit on that, sir. And do we have any single customers contributing more than 10% of the group's revenue? And majority of the sales that we make, are they order based, or we preempt the supply, the demand?
Yeah. So I think the reason for it is both demand-based as well as external factors are also a reason. There was a demand constraint, right, with a lot of inventory in the system, both internationally as well as in India. And the global supply chain issues and the geopolitical tensions did not help this demand situation as it's trying to recover. It is creating a little bit more of an issue, and I think as once these issues clear out, demand is getting better every day. The inventory levels are coming lower and lower, and it's a good position and a good time for us to start growing quarter on quarter again. And what was your
So on this, right, on the demand, on supply chain thing, so do you think because of the freight issues and all, companies are actually sourcing from their nearby countries, such as in Europe? Is this something happening?
Europe and U.S. and India, Europe, U.S., Mexico, and China, I think these are the five major hubs of producing products which we manufacture. And it's not, people continue to import. And the people who buy from Europe, because there are successful European companies, there are successful American companies which continue to produce and continue to grow their revenues. So there's a market for their products. There's a market for overseas manufacturers like ourselves in India as well as Chinese manufacturers. So that demand generally doesn't shift too much because there are different segments, different customer bases, different price points. But at this point of time, it's yet to be seen whether it is a long-term problem and continues to stay or it is something which can be recovered.
Okay. On the export front, right?
I request you to join back the queue, please, as we have other participants waiting.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the line of Abdul Qadir Puranwala from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. So thank you for the opportunity. So just looking at your standalone business, so I understand on a consolidated basis, Norway would impact your margins. But on the standalone side, so if you could provide some guidance as to what is the kind of revenue growth outlook you're witnessing when you're talking about the industry scenario improving. And on the margin side, I mean, should we be at this 33-35% range where we have been on a standalone basis at least? I mean, some color on that would be helpful.
Yeah, we won't be providing any guidance as such, but I can say that margins are dependent on, the gross as well as the EBITDA side. So I think we are confident that, if we can achieve, sustainable growth over the years, we will be able to maintain our costs and keep margins around 40%. Early 40s or 40% level on EBITDA. And based on current scenarios and based on the current competitive environment, if we can start growing once again, like how we have over the last 10 to 15 years pre-COVID era, if we can manage those kinds of growths now moving forward, I think we'll be able to sustain the margins really well.
Sure. That's helpful. And so secondly, on the two plants, what would be commercializing in this fiscal? So could you share what would be the operating cost and both on the above EBITDA as well as on the depreciation, what you guys would be looking, starting the second half once it gets commercialized?
So can you please repeat your question? Because I have not heard your question properly.
Sure, sir. So my question was regarding the Panchla and the Amta plant, which is likely to get commercialized, say, in the second half of fiscal 25. So what would be the OPEX of those two plants initially?
What would be the? Can you repeat
operating
again?
Cost. Yeah, the operating cost I'm talking about, what you would be recording in
the PNC. So operating cost will depend on the production level. Most of the operating cost are variable in nature. So only some costs are fixed in nature, but remaining costs are variable in nature. Electricity cost will increase on the basis of production, but there are some expenses like security expenses and manpower expenses which are fixed in nature. So it is very difficult to give any kind of exact idea of what will be the fixed cost and what will be the operating cost. It will depend on the when the factory will be operational.
Okay, and this last one.
Mr. Puranwala, I request you to join back the queue, please.
Okay, sure. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the line of Ranodeep Sen from MAS Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. I think the management had hinted towards consolidation in some of the earlier calls where some of the smaller players kind of exiting this market. Just wanted to understand.
May I request you to use your handset mode, please?
Is it done now?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, I was mentioning the management had guided in the earlier calls that we might be looking at consolidation in the industry with some of the smaller players exiting the market. I wanted to understand, have you started seeing development?
We've not given any such guidance that this would happen, but we believe that there were a lot of emergence of a lot of new players during the 2 or 3 years of COVID, as the existing players did not have enough capacity to meet the demand at that point of time. But we believe that moving forward in the future, as the competitive intensity of the industry grows and as the brands which were existing for many, many decades continue to gain more and more prominence, it will be difficult for smaller and unorganized and unknown newer players to profitably sustain in the market. But we did not give any guidance per se that there would be an exit.
My next question, wanted to understand the thought process of the management with all the 5 facilities in West Bengal. And given in an era where we live in the repercussions of climate change and impact, is it not too much of a concentration risk by having all the 5 facilities in one state? And is there any thought process towards diversification of some of the future facilities in India? I understand that in the export market, we've already diversified with acquisition of Norway, but any thought process towards diversification in India?
No, I don't see climate change as a reason to move out of West Bengal. I think the climate currently is showing a lot of extreme degrees all over the country, you know, extreme cold, extreme heat, extreme rain. So I think West Bengal is no different. And the problem with our industry is that we manufacture 2,500-3,000 SKUs to achieve a revenue of close to 300 crores in India. So if you look at some of the larger commoditized industries, they will have much lesser revenues, much lesser SKUs and thousands of crores of revenue. And it is a consumption market which is directly related to the population. So, you know, you need to be closer to your customers and you can have multiple facilities. But in terms of our technical know-how and the teams what we have and our operational efficiency, we are very, very comfortable and successful being in West Bengal, and we'll continue to expand here if the business permits.
So we'll move on to the next question from the line of Pradeep Rawat from UK Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon and thank you for the opportunity. So my first question is regarding our capex. So what is the planned capex like in amount, and how much have we incurred till now, and what could be the potential peak revenue from the capex?
So we already communicated earlier that we are running with a capex of about to be, you know, 600 crore rupees, and out of that we already incurred in this year about to be, you know, 180 crore rupees. And if you talk about the total capex, we already incurred about to be 475 crore rupees out of that. So that's the status currently, and the remaining amount, whatever is pending, will be incurred in next 7 to 8 months.
Yeah, and the peak revenue potential from the capex.
So the revenue potential from the capex, you know, it depends on the different kind of products. If we talk about Panchila at a peak capacity can, you know, generate a revenue of about to be 400 crore rupees, right? At a peak capacity, it will not come immediately. It will come in a period of maybe 2 to 5 year timeline. Regarding the Amta facility will not give any kind of revenue addition. The Amta facility is more like a support center. We are building a warehouse and we are building, you know, a radiation plant that will not add any kind of revenue.
Yeah, and what is the current utilization at our current facilities?
It's I don't have a calculated number because there's no way to actually make a correct analysis or calculation, but approximately about 75% to 80%.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the line of Sandeep Abhyange from LKP Securities. Please go ahead. Mr. Sandeep, can you please unmute your line and go ahead with your question?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, so thank you for taking my question. So just wanted to know, how is the customer engagement going on with your export plans as of now, like throughout FY24, how do you assess the demand scenario in the overall export market, majorly in some of your major countries like Middle East or US and Europe? So how is the customer engagement side going on in the export market? If you can throw some light on that.
Yeah. So we engage with the final customers and end users in trade shows and exhibitions. What we participate in about 4 to 6 international exhibitions in a year. And that is a platform for us to engage with both end customers as well as distribution partners. But commercially, we transact only with distribution partners and not with final customers. And we do not have enough people, enough sales teams outside India to work on a customer level, like the way we can work in India, because we have regional managers who basically meet our distributors and, you know, conduct business through them. And that is how we, you know, engage with, you know, our point of contact for international business.
Okay, okay. And my next question was on the side of the split on the branded and ODM sales. So as we have seen in this year, if you compare, the branded and ODM split has like majorly skewed towards the ODM sales. So do you expect this ODM kind of increase to further from here, like from 60-65% to 70-75%, or you are expecting it, the branded sales, to improve in coming years, like in FY25 or FY26? How is this that you are seeing?
See, the ODM business again is a project and contract based business. So if we win some contracts, I think the ratio would look very, very different, and it would go more heavily in favor of ODM. And I think if the global geopolitical scenario improves and the supply chains improve and people are more open to develop business, to look at new opportunities, to look at new partnerships, I think there would be an opportunity for us to grow our branded business.
Okay, okay. Thank you. Thanks for taking my question.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the line of Jatin Chawla from RTL Investments. Please go ahead. Mr. Chawla?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. My question is that, so overall, at a global level, what sort of decline did we see in the labware industry in CY23? I'm coming from the perspective that, you know, you are so small in terms of revenues at a global scale. Why is it that we are not able to still grow with gaining market share? Also, in that same context, wanted to understand, what is your right to win in the export market? And with the Nerve acquisition, has that right to win changed at all?
Correct. So there's no published data as to what is the level of degrowth in FY23 or in some cases FY22, because the financial year internationally is from Jan to December. I believe if you look at the mean average data between companies all over the world, some of the large companies, I think it is between 18 to 20% of degrowth in the first year, and then another 8 to 10% of degrowth in the second year. So the second year was a lower degrowth than the first year because things are always improving as we move forward. But cumulatively, it was, I think, 18 to 20% degrowth in the first year, and then 8 to 10% in the second year. And yeah, I think being a smaller company, being a more efficient company, having a very strong brand in India and having very close customer relationships and being very customer-centric in India, we've been able to outperform the market. And while most of the companies degrow at these levels, we could maintain our degrowth at a fraction of these levels, hence outperforming the industry.
Okay. And the second question on your right to win on the exports, and does that change with Nerve?
I think with the right to win in exports is, you know, it's a pretty much straightforward thing. You know, the US and European legacy manufacturers, it's not getting easier and cheaper to manufacture for them. It's getting more and more expensive as inflation grows, cost of production, cost of hiring people, cost of running operations gets more and more expensive, unaffordable. companies in India and China, there are lots of them, but everybody cannot deliver the quality and reliability and consistency. There are just a few, far and few good companies, and they have a good opportunity to, you know, take a lot of business from these established legacy players in US and Europe. And we count ourselves as one of those few players from India and China, which have the opportunity to do that. And I think on top of that, if you just narrow it down to India, I think India has got a special advantage of growing dissent and, you know, between in that geopolitical scenario, there's a lot of China plus one movement and a lot of China plus one, you know, noise moving around in the European and the US distribution and customer circles. So people are not willing to shift from China to India completely, but people are willing to de-risk, you know, and remove all the eggs just from China and, you know, pass on some business to India. So that's very, very positive for India. So this is just, I think, a very, very promising, you know, kind of a roadmap for the international business for a company like us. And with Nobe, I think we are just trying to ensure that we have a platform in Europe. Because we build great products and we have a great platform in India, but we do not have a platform in Europe. So we built that platform in India from scratch over 4 decades. I think Nobe fast forwards our ability to build that such a platform in Europe, and also it gives us an opportunity to build a platform which an Indian company would find very difficult to do organically in Europe. So getting the Nobe brand, getting the Nobe legacy of 40 years helps us fast track that and fast track our vision to be a prominent player in Europe in the coming years or decades.
Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we request you to restrict your question to one now, please. We'll take our next question from the line of Himangi Tiwari, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Okay, so thank you for your opportunity, sir. So, like you said, the AMRA facility does not add revenue. So, how much cost does it save? Like, what can be the incremental EBITDA and gross margins due to the AMRA facility?
So, the costs of AMRA would, you know, there would not be a lot of incremental costs. We would be streamlining our logistics. At this point, logistics is scattered because we have 5 smaller facilities. And each facility undergoes its own logistics in order to conduct business in India as well as internationally. We'll be streamlining logistics in one place. We'll be having a much larger stocking area. We'll be having a much more efficient you know, logistics hub to be able to move large volumes of containers, you know, to the tune of 5 times, 6 times the volume of what we currently do in the international business in containers. So it's more of a consolidation, and it's more of, you know, being able to drive faster growth into the domestic as well as the international business. I think we incur some costs in the radiation plant because currently we do not conduct radiation. But I think those costs will be offset by saving a lot of costs which we currently incur by outsourcing our radiation to a third-party contractor.
Okay, so could you give some, like, there are no numbers for cost savings or payback period or something?
So in a nutshell, the cash operating expenses will not change, ma'am, because currently whatever we are incurring in the cash operating segment, that will only move to AMRA segment, right? Some depreciation will only add on, right? But it is very difficult to give the exact number, what will be the impact in the short run and what will be the impact in the long run. It depends on what kind of, you know, what kind of infrastructure if we expand there. If we keep, you know, 50 workers there, then the operation cost will be different. If we keep 100 workers, depends on the volume.
We'll take our next question from the line of Vedant Mehta from QRC Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. I'd like to ask about the stickiness of your customers and in both existing products as well as cell culture. And how difficult it would be to break into the cell culture market based on this?
I think the cell culture is a very sticky market where customers are very, very concerned about their research. It's a long period of growing cells, and cheaper plastics, which save some cost, could turn out to be very, very expensive if, their research work doesn't go as planned. But I think we've built enough goodwill in the market in India to be able to fast track the stickiness. I'm not saying that we'll launch cell culture products and we'll be the preferred choice of supplier in India. But I think Tarsans would find it easier to break into the cell culture market as compared to any other player who would want to do this in India. I think the Indian scientific fraternity has been using cell culture plastics from top quality brands from Europe and US over the last five decades. And but with the kind of R&D and the kind of innovation we have put in over the last 2.5-3 years to build the cell culture line, and we are very, very confident of very good success in India, and we are confident of penetrating the international markets with these products as well.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the line of Jasjeet Walia from Clockwine Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thanks for taking my question. Sir, my question is with respect to the data that you gave me earlier, that 20% of sales are from the government-linked entities in India.
No, 20% of our domestic sales.
Correct, 20% of your domestic sales. So my understanding is that previously this plastic labware used to be sold on rate contracts to all these government entities, and now as per mandate, government is moving all the procurement to GEM platform, where the L1 bidder takes the contract. So do you see any pressure on your business which you get from the government, pressure on margins?
No, the business is competitive, and it always was competitive. It always continues to be competitive. In the past, when the government had rate contracts with companies, a rate contract is, in very simple terms, a list of products with the contractual price. So at that time, there was also the pressure because it was not us having an exclusive rate contract with the government. There were various other companies having rate contracts with their products and their prices. So it was also brutally competitive. The only thing what has changed with GEM is it's become an online platform. But at the same time, there are parameters, specifications, and other things so that you can be a registered vendor and be able to quote for it. But the process of doing business has changed. The rate contract business, which used to be there earlier, was as competitive because the government could have rate contract with multiple companies for the same product lines.
Correct, sir. Sir, can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Sir, in the last quarter, you sounded much more optimistic on the domestic business. You said that, from, let's say, for third quarter of last quarter onward, you said that you would, the company would now grow on a Y basis and the trends would strengthen. Do you still maintain that guidance for the domestic business?
Yes, I believe that the situation is improving and the growth should be there. We cannot look at growth only sequentially because, as I mentioned, Q1, Q2, Q3 are very similar to each other. But Q4 is always an outlier if you look at the ratio of our revenues. So there would always be a scenario where very rarely, if it ever happens, it's never happened in the history of our company that Q1 has been better than Q4. So that is, the way the industry is. But overall, we are very, very positive because we feel that the lowest is behind us. And whatever we see is, higher and getting better.
And just to add, we don't give any outlook on the domestic numbers. But we always believe that, historical numbers are the most trusted numbers. And if you see, our domestic numbers has increased from 46 crore Q3 FY24 to 59 crore rupees, and that's a big jump that is done. And if you see the number of Q4 FY23 also, we also grown by 2%.
Sir, pre-COVID industry used to grow at around 12-13% CAGR. So yes. Would the industry come back to that kind of growth rate in FY25?
It is very difficult for us to give industry growth outlook.
Let me put my question in another manner. Would Tarsans return to industry level growth in FY25?
So we cannot give any kind of outlook, to be very honest, right? We only say that, you know, we are working really hard and we are hopeful for the better number.
So the thing is that as we, you know, as the industry is rebounding, you know, it's very, very difficult to give accurate numbers and percentage points, whether, you know, 13%, 12%, 15% at this point of time. When the industry is in a stable mode and growing year over year, you know, such predictions become much easier. At this point of time, the only thing we can say is that demand looks much better than before and the inventory levels look much lower than before.
Got it, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take that as last question for today. I now hand the conference over to management for closing comments. Over to you.
I take this opportunity to thank everyone for joining the call. We will keep updating the investor community on a regular basis for incremental updates on your company. I hope we have been able to address all your queries. For any further information, kindly get in touch with us or SGA, our investor relation advisors. Thank you once again.
Thank you. On behalf of Ambit Capital, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.